Hello, and welcome to Cambridge Libraries of the World podcast. I'm Hadin Dour from the Library Marketing Team here at Cambridge University Press. Joining me on today's episode on online learning and digital textbooks is Dave Morris, Laura Newby, and Jack McDonald. Dave is the Digital Projects Editor in our Higher Education team here at Cambridge. Laura is a Product Manager in the same team, and Jack is our Director of Library Sales. Jack, Dave, and Laura, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi there, Hadi.
Thanks for having us, Hadi.
Hi, Hadi.
Thank you, guys. So last month, we celebrated 1 year since the Cambridge Higher Education website was officially launched. I think it's safe to say the pandemic affected all aspects of our lives, particularly education. Universities around the world closed their campuses and adapted quickly to transfer all learning online. And so it became more necessary than ever to provide digital access to learning materials in order to minimize the disruption to learning. Today, we'll discuss Cambridge's response to the pandemic by creating the Higher Education website, some of the ongoing developments to it, and also how libraries and librarians can use and benefit from the website. Dave, I'm going to come to you first. I know the Higher Education website launched earlier than originally planned. Can you take us back to last year and walk us through why the website was created and how the launch date evolved?
Absolutely, I would love to. I can't quite believe the website's a whole year old already. It's flown by. A little bit of the proud parent there, I think. So the Higher Education website has been in the works for us since early 2019. Mm-hmm. When we identified a need among universities for good online access to textbook products. Mm-hmm. And we started the scoping work for that even earlier. And actually it came out of a previous initiative we'd been working on. So we identified this need for the Higher Education website. And we originally had a target launch date for the website of December 2020. Mm-hmm. In time for the spring term of 2021 to give librarians and academics at universities time to investigate it thoroughly ahead of fall 2021. However, I'm pretty sure we all remember what happened last spring, in March and April 2020. And at that time, we very much knew that the website we were building would be enormously helpful, mm-hmm, for instructors, students and librarians as they were moving into online teaching in a really challenging environment. And we felt that our textbooks online would really meet those needs for remote, accessible, high-quality learning materials. Mm-hmm. And we knew that we had this product in the works. It was going to be hugely helpful, and that December 2020 was just going to be far too late to support the higher education community.
Yes.
So in April 2020, we took the bold decision to launch a fully functioning website in time for fall 2020. And typically in the United States, that would be August. Mm-hmm. But we knew that if we launched in, say, late August, early September, that would be no real help to our librarian customers, because they would need time to evaluate the learning experience we could offer and make a decision about whether or not to purchase access to those textbooks. So really, launching at that point would be far too late. We needed the website available earlier. So to meet a really ambitious deadline of having a live website ready to go in August 2020, we set a really ambitious goal. We wanted to do a beta launch of the website in June. And historically, the press has never done a beta launch for an academic project before. And we were trying to do that 6 months ahead of our original schedule of launching in December 2020. So that meant an awful lot of work in a very short space of time. Fortunately, our technology team had started building already and had sort of a solid architecture in place for the website. So we knew roughly what it was going to look and feel like.
Right.
But we had to make some really big decisions around how we were going to deliver it and what we were going to deliver for June. Mm-hmm. And we're really fortunate, being a broad-ranging publisher, that we have an education division who'd already done some ebook publishing, more like what we're trying to do with textbooks. So we got to share knowledge with them and learn from what they've done. Mm-hmm. And somehow, I still don't know how our incredible development team managed to pull off a beta launch of the website on the 30th of June 2020, bang on the target. It's incredible. I don't think any of them slept. I took a week's holiday just before it went, and I feel terrible about that still. But they really worked hard and did a fantastic job. And so actually pulling together that beta launch 6 months early meant we hadn't launched a finished website, which we would have loved to do.
Mm-hmm.
But we've worked for the last 5 or 6 years with an agile methodology, so we don't expect to launch a finished product. So we had a bit of an expectation that we'd need to do some work. And we decided to have 3 phases of launch.
Mm-hmm.
So we did the beta launch in June, the kind of big launch in August, and then had December 2020 still as our goal to bring up the website to our final pre-planned product on schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And we set about doing that and got some really great customer feedback that actually took us in a different direction on a few things. But I think Laura is going to talk about that in a moment. So
yes.
I'll leave that for her.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. It's really interesting to hear the background and, you know, decision making that happened behind the scenes and also some of the collaborations that took place. Dave, I'm going to come to you again. Can you remind us of what our digital learning offering was in terms of higher education prior to the pandemic?
Absolutely. So we had a couple of digital learning options available.
Mm-hmm.
In September 2019, we launched something called Multimedia Fluent Mechanics Online,
okay.
Which is based on a successful CD and DVD product we had called Multimedia Fluent Mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a collection of videos and interactive labs to explain concepts in fluent mechanics. And as you've probably guessed, what we did there was take the existing content and host it in a web-based database to make it more easily accessible to customers. It's a product we've had going for a couple of years now, and I'm a real fan because it's actually the first thing I worked on when I moved into this role 2 years ago, and it's still available for anybody who's interested in that. But the other product we had available was something called Textbooks on Core, and that was very much an experiment, really. We thought that librarians would like to make textbooks available to students through an institutional purchase model,
mm-hmm.
but we weren't sure. So we launched flat HTML renderings of some textbooks on our core research platform,
mm-hmm.
And that essentially recreated the layout of a print textbook online. And we found that a number of librarians liked the concept, which validated that for us and led us to build the HE website, which has superseded that model. And we really took on board the librarian feedback from that experiment. So we had a lot of feedback that librarians really wanted offline versions of those textbooks available for students to download and read either off campus or offline, and also allowing students to make notes and highlights on those textbooks. So those were really key things we wanted to build into the new higher education website.
Thank you. Thanks, Dave. Thank you very much for explaining that so brilliantly. Laura, I'm going to move to you now.
Mm-hmm.
You're involved with developing the website, which has brought us many opportunities to collaborate with our customers and to deliver an experience that is meaningful to them. I know that some of the features on the website include a no-login reading, mobile reading, downloading and printing the textbooks. Tell us the journey behind creating the best user experience for our customers.
Yeah, so I mean, the development of the HE website and the lead up to launch and then this year post-launch has, I think, always taken into consideration key customer feedback, as Dave was saying. And we launched with that fantastic product in June and then in the beta launch and then fully in August 2020. But I think the idea is that the site, we never really want it to remain static. And so we absolutely have to look to our customers to help us best reflect the needs of the higher education community through the website and the functionality it offers. So we do that in a number of ways. So we have a live user feedback tab on every page of the HE website. I think it's at the bottom right-hand corner. And it's split down into general or specific, depending on how detailed the user wants to be.
Yes.
So we can really drill down into some granular detail if the customer decides they want to share something that's specific that might be frustrating them or something positive that they want to highlight as well. and it really helps us understand their experience on the site. We also run a number of panel surveys throughout, just across months and year and the year through a platform called Recollective. And we have instructors, students and librarian panels to survey them on larger pieces of development work or future strategy relating to the higher education website, so that we can make sure that we really get a feel for whether or not we're heading in the right direction for the needs of those customers. And then finally, one of the most simple forms of feedback that we receive is through individuals getting in touch via sales representatives or customer services, which is shared really regularly with all colleagues that are involved in maintaining and developing the HE site, as well as those marketing it, those selling it. And so, for example, when it came to no login reading, I think there were multiple librarians reaching out to us to explain that this would be a useful feature if students didn't have to come in via their library and then as well log in to a separate higher education account in order to read the book. So whilst we still have a higher education account login place in place for users who require access to the full site or want access to the full suite of functionality that our e-reader offers, which is the highlighting, the notes, the annotations, and the offline reading. We also have guest access for students that don't necessarily want to do that and just really want to read the book in an online environment. We really listen to that feedback, and now there's a more positive user experience in place for students who do just want to come in and read the book from their as they come in from their library.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you. I think it's really good to hear that, you know, how you've been interacting with our customers. I think that's really, you know, key to delivering an experience that is meaningful for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I know you've mentioned some of the functions, but, you know, can you tell us a bit more of how you went about deciding what to include or what not to include?
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, looking at competitors and looking at feedback and making sure that we have a baseline of what users really need. Because the HE website is geared towards a number of different customers, and I think the key ones are the students who are reading the books, the instructors who are assigning the books, and then the librarians who are curating that knowledge online for their students to access. We have to listen to all of those, and I think it's a really fine balance in figuring out if what a librarian is telling us is necessary is actually what a student wants.
Absolutely.
So we're mindful of every piece of feedback that comes our way, but we do have to balance it with how it might be seen by another section of customers, which is where the panel surveys come in really useful in making sure that we can, you know, if a piece of feedback comes in from a librarian on, say, engagement analytics, for example, then we can take that and go to our instructors who are on that panel and say, is this what you're looking for? Are you looking for something slightly different when it comes to engagement analytics for looking at how your students consume the content? It's a fine line, but it's critical that we listen to all the voices of the customers we serve to make sure that we get the best out of our e-textbooks and out of the website itself. So, yeah.
Thanks, Laura. And Jack, I mentioned at the start that you lead the library sales team. Tell us how important this site is to libraries and librarians and what has been their reaction to it.
Thanks, Hadi. Yeah, I mean, this has been something that delivering something that works for libraries with digital textbooks is something that libraries have been asking us, and librarians have been asking us for a number of years. And it's something that we've tried to do and tried various ways to find a way to make it work. Dave mentioned some previous experiments and previous ways that we've tried to find a business model that works. And I feel like this time around, we finally delivered something that our customers were happy with and that all parties thought was a sustainable model. So it's been really important for us to try and find a way to make our textbooks available on a library model. And I think, you know, there's a perception that academic publishers don't want to make their textbooks available to libraries and that they only want to sell directly to students. But I think that's really not the case with us. this is something that we've been trying to get to achieve for a number of years, and, mm-hmm. and I think we've finally done it. The feedback has been pretty amazing. I think it obviously depends hugely where you go in the world and what the strategy of a library is, whether they actually want to provide textbook access to their students, whether they see that's part of their role.
Absolutely.
But I think for those libraries who do see that as part of their role, that the feedback to the HA website has been very positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really a mix of things. It's partially the technology, which Dave and Laura have explained really well, and it's partially to do with the business model, which we've changed our approach over time. We've listened to feedback, and I think we've innovated on that.
Mm-hmm.
In order to deliver something that works for all parties. So no, it's been a really exciting experience for us.
Thank you. Thanks, Jack. I mean, I know you've talked about the customers, but how big of a shift was this for the library team, you know, to focus on a brand new product and offering?
It was a big, very quick shift. As Dave mentioned, we had to really bring the development forward. We had to mm-hmm. move very quickly. It was a difficult time for the team because we were all suddenly working from home and working remotely, and launching any new product is a big undertaking. It needs a lot of coordination across the sales teams and across the other internal teams. And we were doing this remotely for the first time. So it was a kind of all hands to the deck moment where we had to really make sure we understood what we were promoting and what we had on our hands, and make some very quick decisions about pricing and business models and take those out to market, all within a matter of weeks. It feels like it all happened very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that really exciting. I know a lot of the team found it very exciting, but it was, had the odd stressful moment as well.
Of course. Thank you, Jack. Laura, I'm going to come to you again about accessibility. I know this is a huge part of what we do at Cambridge and something this website wishes to address and deliver on. Tell us how.
Yeah, so we want to make sure that the website reflects the standards of accessibility that librarians and students and instructors expect. And so we have undertaken an accessibility audit of all of the areas of our website, including within the e-reader itself. So making sure the content within the ebook and how it looks and appears and the functionality of it is accessible to all too. And so we undertook that audit, and there were some things that we needed to update. And those have pretty much all been successfully carried out. The accessibility audit within the e-reader, I believe, is still ongoing, just to make sure that we're getting everything and we're hitting all of those accessibility touch points. And we are aiming to be DAC accredited and have that reflected on our website in an accessibility statement in the near future. So that should be completed in the next few months. And it's really good to be able to say that our website and our e-reader will be up to standard that mm-hmm. that our customers expect as we move forward into a more digital HE era.
Fantastic. Thank you, Laura. And again, Dave, as I said, you've been involved from the very beginning. Aside from moving the launch date to an earlier one, can you give us some other challenges you face in the process of launching the site?
Yeah, I'm sure I can. There were quite a lot in there. So there were multiple technological challenges on the back end. For example, I remember that about 2 days before we were due to announce the very first launch, which was, again, a matter of days before we launched. So like a week out from launch, we were working out how and whether we could actually integrate our chosen e-reader with the website. So we're kind of staring down the barrel of launching this new website without any of the capabilities we knew it needed. And like I say, the technology team did incredible work there to make sure that would function correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Another of the challenges that we faced is that to use the new e-reader, we've had to convert a number of our textbooks into a new format. So it uses an industry standard format called EPUB.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to create all of our textbooks in that format now and have done for a number of years. But some of the older books just weren't available in that. So we had to take them through that process, which has been really hard work. And I know we've had a team working on that very, very hard behind the scenes for about 18 months now, trying to get everything converted and ready and work on the higher education website.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those have been a couple of our really big technology challenges to get the website launched, quite apart from all the time challenges.
Thank you. Thanks, Dave. Really interesting to hear. I'm going to come to you again, Jack. We have over 600 textbooks hosted on the site, maybe a bit more now. Have we seen any sort of pattern in terms of universities and libraries accessing the textbooks? For instance, is there anything in particular that is working really well for them?
Yeah, it's getting on for 1,000 books now onto the website. I think we'll get there fairly soon. But it's a growing number. So, you mentioned what the patterns are. I think mm-hmm. I think that's one of the really fascinating things is the kind of analysis that we can do. We can see usage across the higher education website at universities and see what we and what our customers can learn from that. There's two things that stand out. One is, a lot of these textbooks were adopted on courses before mm-hmm. this website was even created. And that's one of the big questions for us is whether usage will just follow those adoptions that some of which have been in place at university courses for a number of years, and whether that kind of embedded use of titles will just remain, and those will be the textbooks that have the highest amount of use. But the other thing that is really interesting is that for the first time with this website, we've created a successful collections model for textbooks. So instead of libraries subscribing to one or two titles that they know are adopted, we're actually giving access to our entire collection. And so it's a really good opportunity for us to see whether students and researchers are using titles that they perhaps didn't expect and that certainly we didn't expect either. So it's a question about whether there's use across the collection and across different subject areas, and we are seeing some interesting trends there. This, mm-hmm. it's probably a bit early to tell in some ways, what lessons we can learn from that. But
yeah,
we're certainly getting a lot of data. And I think the final thing that's been really fascinating is to see the usage of some of the other bits of technology and other bits of functionality that are there. So there are, as well as just reading. And reading offline, students and lecturers can use the annotations functionality and leave notes there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really surprised me as how well they've been used. I mean, some of the numbers have been completely, many times higher than I would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very nice to see that it's not just reading the material, it's also interacting with it, which has been very successful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks, Jack. Thanks, everyone. I'd like us to now shift the discussion slightly to digital learning, or this move to digital, as it's called. I think it's interesting because not only has it changed our way of learning, the way we work has changed too. Most of us are working from home or moving to some sort of hybrid working environment. So with that in mind, Dave, do you think then that the future is solely digital now that it's been proven that it is possible to do everything online?
That's a great question, Hadie. If I knew the answer to that, I would be a very, very rich man in about 10 years' time.
Share the wealth, Dave.
Absolutely not. I think to answer the question, I think we're going to see much more of a blend. I think what mm-hmm. we've all learnt in this year, whether it's in our education, in our professional lives, in our personal lives, is the real value of human contact and being face to face and together. So I think we will still see that continue. I think how education is delivered will change, and I think there will be much more of a mix of online learning materials mixed with really intentionally designed in-person sessions. So, mm-hmm. for example, you'll do your knowledge acquisition from a book or whatever product you're using in advance of a session, but you'll come together face-to-face to discuss that or to practice a skill mm-hmm. or carry out an experiment, whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there will be huge value in that, and we'll all actually appreciate it more. I also, as a digital publisher, don't necessarily believe that this is the end of print. Print books have been incredibly resilient for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually sitting staring at my own bookshelf at home at the moment. And I know that I will continue to buy print books, and I'm sure many of our students and librarians will as well. And I think yes. there's a place for that mixed economy of using the best format that's right for you at mm-hmm. any given moment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dave. You have answered the question. So there you go. And Jack, just on that same theme of moving to digital, are you worried at all about how well the site will do with librarians as we begin to come out of the pandemic?
I don't think so, because I think this is actually, you know, having a sustainable library model for textbooks is, it was accelerated by the pandemic, like so many other things. It was mm-hmm. accelerated by the pandemic, but this has been a problem that librarians have been trying to solve for 10 years or more. So I think it definitely moved things along, but I think that certainly having library access across campus to key textbooks is always going to be a good thing for students and for libraries. So it doesn't worry me. Mm-hmm. Obviously I'm delighted that we will hopefully be coming out of the pandemic at some point. So, that's not something that keeps me up at night.
That's good to know. I think on the flip side though, there has been discussions of a digital divide. So is there a concern that, you know, students who come from disadvantaged backgrounds will be even more disadvantaged? You know, and I'm thinking of libraries, Jack, you know, in parts of the world where perhaps access to the internet is an issue. How does the higher education site serve their needs? How do you make it more accessible to them, Jack?
So I think there's a couple of ways, and it's definitely something on our mind. I mean, there's a couple of things that we're doing. Is one is that we're taking a very market based approach to pricing. So in lower income countries, we will be making very what we hope will be affordable offers for access to this collection, because we certainly don't want to be putting up any barriers to access in certain parts of the world. I think the other thing is that the technological side, there are certainly some areas of the world have much better mobile internet access than actually at the library or through other devices. So the e-reader has an app, it has offline access, so we're doing what we can to try and make that accessible. But I think that's something we really want to discuss with librarians in all over the world is how to make this work for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a work in progress, and I'm sure there's lots more we can do.
Thank you. Thanks, Jack. And Laura, would you like to chip in on that?
I feel like Dave and Jack have probably covered it, you know, pretty much my thoughts and feelings on it too. I think that we do really need to be mindful of that digital divide. Mm-hmm. It's in terms of reaching people across the world, I think we shouldn't necessarily push ahead with digital only at the expense of those who might not have the technology to access
mm-hmm.
Digital only. So like Dave says, I think print still has a place.
Absolutely.
But you know, hopefully as the world hopefully continues to push forward, you know, I think that the affordable sales model approach that Jack mentioned is something that as lower income countries hopefully get improved access to digital, that we can support their higher education communities as they grow and as they build. I don't have too much to add other than that, and that we as a publisher, I guess, just you know, need to be look on the lookout for new trends in digital, and mm-hmm. And making sure that maybe not every digital product we, as a publisher, we might not necessarily have a role in, but what can we do to support teaching and learning experiences with digital or hybrid products that get the best out of students and give instructors the best support that they need in their classrooms.
Thank you, Laura. That's great. And final question now before we move to the last part of this discussion, and that's for you again, Laura. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the visions for this site. You know, as it becomes more established, what is the next phase? What next now?
I think I'll just go back to what I said previously. It's just being on the lookout for emerging trends. But we do, if you could see our what we're calling a roadmap, it's quite extensive, and it's bringing in a lot of that customer feedback and a lot of the things that we can that we see in other competitors, and making sure that we're keeping on top of things and just improving existing features. I think one thing that we're working on is annotations and making them a more collaborative experience. Mm-hmm. Rather than just individual annotations in individual ebooks. So there's a lot of things on the future roadmap for the HD website that we've got plans in place for and that we're scoping out. And it's just going to be a very exciting 2 to 3 years as we roll out some of those or look into and research and make sure that all of those new things that we have put on this roadmap are actually going to work for the market as new digital trends emerge. I think we continue to take that feedback in, like what I was saying in the first part, and we just have to keep listening to our customers and keep evolving our visions for the site as time goes on.
Thank you, Laura, and thank you so much, everyone, for your fantastic contributions. I think it's great to hear, you know, the work that went behind it from Dave and also from Laura on your side and Jack on your end with your team. And just some of the things that stood out for me is that, you know, this is a website that is continuously developing. You know, there's continuous collaboration also within teams, but also with customers, you know, hearing what they want and giving it to them. And I think in sum, it's what Cambridge is about, and it's how digital learning should be. So we will now move to the final part of the discussion, where we look at improving libraries around the world. I'm going to ask all three of you, if you could make one change within academic publishing, what would it be? Jack, would you like to go first?
So I think one thing that I feel quite strongly about with ebooks is that a lot of the pricing and business models and the way that libraries buy them is still based on how print books were sold. And the one thing I'd like to see more of is sales models and business models that really break away from that and innovate and really deliver the advantage of having things digitally. So with our higher education website, the example is that we sell on we have a collections model so that libraries have access to the whole collection. Mm-hmm. And it really breaks away from just replicating the single textbooks that students buy or that libraries have bought in the past. So I'd love to see more of that. I think that's really exciting when ebooks deliver something much more than just what the print model does.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you. Dave, would you like to go?
Yeah, I'd love to. I think what the one change I would like to make in higher ed is seeing more affordable, high-quality learning materials. Mm-hmm. I know that higher education has the power to change people's lives, but I think there's a real access barrier around the cost of some of those learning materials.
Absolutely.
And I'd love to see publishers, academic publishers in particular, kind of taking a lead on reducing costs by making learning products more affordable. So that's my 10 pence worth on that.
Thank you, Dave. Fantastic. Laura?
Not that Dave and I ever spoke about this before, but we had exactly the same answer in terms of affordability. I completely agree with Dave that affordable learning materials, digital or otherwise, would be the one thing that I would like to see change across academic publishing going forward. And maybe as well, just another thing that I was just thinking about is maybe a little bit more collaboration between academic publishers too. Mm-hmm. It would be interesting to see if there's any opportunities to work more closely together on digital products so that we don't necessarily have a mishmash of things out there. That might be a really big ask. Obviously, we're all trying to support the higher education community in the way that we feel is best. But yeah, I think it would be interesting to have that change, and see if we can all work together to move forward and to provide excellent learning tools for students.
Definitely. I agree with you, Laura. I think collaboration is the way forward, really. Thank you so much, Dave, Jack, and Laura, for your fantastic insights. And to everyone listening, what are your thoughts? What change would you make? We would love to hear from you. Please join in the discussion by tweeting us at @CambridgeUPLib, all one word. We're also on LinkedIn on the Cambridge University Press Academic. Get in touch with us using the hashtag LibrariesAroundTheWorld. We'll also add a link to our higher education website when this episode is published, so keep an eye out for that. That's it for today's episode on digital textbooks and online learning. We hope you've learned something new and we've given you some food for thought. A very big thank you again to my incredible guests, and we'll see you next time.